We're going to take your phone calls in just a moment with Jeffrey Doherty as we talk about these incredible stories of ETs and where they may come from and get your views on all of that when we come back. And we are back. George Norrie here with Jeffrey Doherty talking about his work and, of course, your phone calls. Jeffrey, if there was that one answer you could get answered, what would that be?
Oh, boy, the one answer. I think the one answer that I would want is, how do I make certain that I go where I want to go after I'm finished with this life?
Uh-huh. Interesting. I think I would want to know, how did we get here? What's it all about?
Oh, that's a good one, too.
What started it? You know, I've had so many physicists, Jeff, on the program over the years, and not one can answer the question, and this is no slighting them at all, but not one of them can answer the question about the Big Bang, how it started. Nobody really knows.
Yeah, that's the thing where no matter if you're a person that believes in religion or a person that believes in science or if science is your religion or if you just believe in spirituality, for something to have been created, if you go back, there's got to be that causal agent. And I think a place where we could all gather together and maybe start in harmony and unity and brotherhood is that whatever that start was, that's the spark of divinity.
I think so, too. It's just, for me, it boggles my mind how something started from nothing. And then they say, well, there always was. My mother used to tell me about God when I was a kid. Always was, always will be. And I went, Mom, that's not an answer.
You were preparing to be the great host of Coast to Coast, and even then.
Even tried. Let's take some calls here for you. Let's start by going to Bill in Williamsburg, Virginia, to get us started. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay, great. Hope you are, too.
Hey, Jeffrey.
Hello, Bill. Say hello to my kids if you see them. They're not too far from you.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'll recognize them. But I got to tell you, I think you're doing a tremendous disservice to the human beings on this planet. Jesus Christ is the creator. God created the universe through Jesus Christ. Now, and Adam was the original sin. That's why Jesus had to come and wash us of our sins with his blood. He didn't have to die on the cross, according to you, because we were all divine when we're born, I guess, and we don't have this sin from Adam. From eating from the wrong tree. So you're teaching everything different in the Bible, although you claim you have all this, you know, experience with the Bible. So it's either you're teaching Jesus' way or you're teaching this deception, which is the way that you're being used as a tool for the devil.
Well, let's let Jeff pop in for a second. Jeff, I don't hear you saying anything derogatory about Jesus.
Well, George, we both know that, you know, the things that I talk about bring up a lot of emotion in people.
Yes.
And rightly so. And people, you know, have very strong faith. And I have no problem with Bill having his very strong faith. And maybe I'm a little bit more understanding, George, because where Bill is, Jeff once was, no doubt about it. And, you know, Jeff is comfortable with where he is from looking at the text and nothing but the text and studying it and following my own belief and leading and guiding. And the beautiful thing about it, George, is that Bill doesn't have to answer for Jeff, and Jeff doesn't have to answer for Bill. We're both on our individual journeys, and I wish Bill the best on his, and I'm sure he'll do his best. And I hope that Bill will give me the room and will cheer me on as I do my best on mine.
Well, now, where have you come across with Jesus in the New Testament and the Bible? What are you saying that's so different?
You know, you probably couldn't, if I was put on trial for being a Christian, I doubt that you could convict me. I don't believe that Jesus is as presented in the New Testament. I believe that what is really being taught in the New Testament is the idea of the Christ, which is really the anointing, and that every one of us, when we're born, and John said this is in the final message of the last apostle, every one of us, when we come into this world, we receive the message of enlightenment. It's right in the first chapter of John. So every one of us receives that anointing. Every one of us receives that Christing, if you will. And that's where I believe that I go with it. And again, I give Bill and everybody else room to do their thing, and I just ask them to give me room to do my thing.
Understand. Are you offended when they say you may be a product of the devil?
You know, the first 400,000 times I heard it, it offended me a little bit, George, but now it's just in one ear and out the other.
Okay, interesting take. Let's go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Hey, Corny, welcome to the show.
Hey, George and Jeffrey. God bless you and yours. You know, we're going through some tough times. Thanks, Gina, for letting me get on. I don't know, Jeffrey, if you watch TV, there's a show called Evil on CBS. And I believe we're in end times. So you have anything to say about evil and stuff like that and how we can defeat it?
You know, I don't watch much TV. I do watch Beyond Belief on Guy every now and then, but I don't watch a whole lot of television. Are we in the end times? Cornelius, and I think we've talked before, if I remember correctly, I think that a lot of the end time gloom, the end time doom, the end time worry is by people that either don't really have a complete understanding of what the actual biblical texts say, or maybe some that are even trying to profit by making us be afraid. Because the book of Revelation, the apocalypse, it sends shudders of fear up and down our spines. When Cornelius, you probably know this, you sound like a scholarly guy, but the word apocalypse means an unveiling. So a lot of people are afraid of an apocalypse. I'm looking forward to an apocalypse. And I think that if it is the end times, and this sounds a little bit cliche, but I believe it after 40 years of studying this, if this is the end times, I think that I've read the last page in the book and we win.
Well, I do appreciate the fact that you let Bill in Williamsburg to talk the way he wants to talk and to get his views out without being argumentative, Jeffrey.
Well, George, you know, again, it used to bother me a little bit because, you know, I get that. Every day I get up, I do my workout, I have my coffee, I read my comments, and I get called Antichrist and Devil 20 times before 9 a.m. So
I don't think you're the Antichrist.
And I was just like Bill, and the first time you confront something that is against your beliefs, you react with anger, you lash out, but then you sit back and you think, huh, maybe he had a point. And if I blast Bill, he never listens to me again or looks at another word that I've written or spoken. If I'm nice to him, maybe he says, I'll give the guy another look, and who knows what can happen.
Well,
I'm just trying to get information out, George.
I've got to tell you, in my career, which spans a long time, I have never seen a time period where more people are argumentative and viciously, in some cases, than ever before. I mean, in years gone back, and if you had a discussion with somebody, you know, he had his views, you had yours, and everybody went their own way, and you were friends. That's not happening anymore.
You know, people just can't do that anymore, George. And the fine art of conversation, the fine art of friendly debate, making each other better, it has lost. And I'm glad that there still are shows like Coast to Coast AM where there still is some of that. But I think you're right, George. And as you were saying that, the thing that came into my mind is people are more vicious and more lashing out because perhaps they're more afraid than ever before. And me being the crazy, wild-eyed optimist that I am says that's a good thing because they're not comfortably snoozing anymore. The alarm's gone off. They're mad it's gone off. And they're at least moving and having emotion. And a great percentage of them, I feel, are going to find their way to the truth.
Let's go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hi, Bear. Go ahead.
Hey there, George. I heard my buddy Corny on there.
He was there. He popped in.
I know it. I had to say hello to all of my fans and friends out there in coast-to-coast land. I've also got a great comment and question out for you, George. But first, I've got to mention the word coincidence. Listen to this. I know you don't believe in them.
I do not.
I do. And here's the thing, George. You mentioned Tommy might be going for jury duty.
Yes.
Well, I want you to know that 12 hours ago at 4 o'clock this afternoon, I got in the mail my first in 77 years notice to appear for jury duty.
See, I think that's fate. You and Tommy are going to be on a jury together, and we may never see you two again for the next 2 years.
I'll go with Tommy anywhere he wants to go.
I'm not sure he'd say the same about you.
Well, maybe he doesn't, but if he doesn't take me to see ZZ Top next time he goes, I'm going to be mad.
Just might be. Anyways, what's up? Go ahead with your question with Jeffrey.
Yes, for Jeffrey and you too, George. What do you guys think about my hypothesis? It's not a theory. I don't have enough facts. But what do you think about the idea that God wrote the Bible? And I'll listen off the air. Thanks, George.
Well, I'll give that to you, Jeffrey.
Thanks, George.
Yeah.
Did God write the Bible? Well, I guess it has to get to who is God, what is God, and now we're right back at the Big Bang where we started this segment or the last one, I can't recall. But did God write the Bible? I think that there is sufficient evidence within the text of what we call the Bible to indicate some type of suprahuman contribution to it. Now, whether you call that God or not, I have to say, and I'm not as much a fan of the Bible as I used to be, but I would still have to say, if pressed into a corner, that there is some supra or extra human elements to the document that we call the Bible. If that's God, well, then I guess I'm saying yes.
Well, and I think God may have written the Bible by dictating through some kind of mind and matter to those who wrote the Bible. Isn't that possible, too?
And, George, if I'm right and we're all divine, sovereign, and free, and we all have the spark of divinity in us, even if it was written by men, then wasn't it in turn written by God if the spark of the divine's in us?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So in one respect, he's right. He may not have physically sat down and written it, but he sure passed it on.
Absolutely. I would definitely agree with Barry. He sounds like a great guy, and it's a real honor to be able to talk to your Coast to Coast audience.
We're with Jeffrey Doherty, of course. We'll continue to take phone calls. Let's go west of the Rockies. Reverend Jeffrey in Seattle's with us. Hi, Reverend. Thanks for calling.
George, hi, Jeffrey, and what a pleasure to be on tonight. George, as you know, I'm a frequent caller and a listener, and I just wanted to lift up Jeffrey and his bravery. You know, I'm semi-retired now, but I've been both a pastor and a parish minister and hospital chaplain. I've seen a lot of good and bad in this world. And you know, one of my common points that I always make to that question about, you know, the end times, it's all a holy mystery. Faith is where we find it. So I encourage you, Jeff, to stay strong. My question, Jeff, is this. 33 years ago, I had a chance to do some trekking and wandering in northern India, staying in monasteries and such. And wherever I went, up in the Garhwal Himalayas, usually elderly people would tell me, you know, your Jesus was here. Do you know anything about the missing years of Jesus, those 18 years where no one knew where he was, from his age of 12 when he was dedicated in the temple, and then he reappeared when he was 30 and baptized by John in the Jordan? But, you know, once again, those 18 missing years, and the people of northern India speak of Jesus. They called him Isa, Lord Isa. And if you really want to dive deep, Jeffrey, there's stories of a tomb in Srinagar in Kashmir, where it's rumored that after the resurrection, he went to India. Now, I have not been there, but if you would, just touch on the missing years of Jesus, and in particular, northern India. It blew me away 33 years ago.
That's very conceivable, Jeffrey, isn't it? His
it is.
Travels
like
were everywhere.
I commend Reverend Jeffrey, you know, for his scholarship. He's very well-spoken, and it sounds like a fine gentleman. And, of course, we need more people like him doing that work in the prisons, in the hospitals, and, you know, serving the needs of people. It sounds like he has a real pastor's heart. And, George, if you, you know, do believe that Jesus was a historical figure, then you've got a big gap in his life, like the Reverend was saying. He was about 12 years old up until probably 32-ish. That's a long time that you've got to account for. Where was he? What was he doing? There's a lot of speculation about Egypt. There's a lot of speculation about India.
Mm-hmm.
And then even after the resurrection, there's talk of even going up into the you know, the United Kingdom, Britannia. If I was going to pick one of those options, and I had to pick those, I think that the India Kashmiri one sounds probably the most likely, because if you look at the teachings of Jesus as we have them today, there is a lot of Eastern influence and a lot of congruence between his teachings and the teachings of the East as well. So I think that's something that's very well worth studying on a scholarly basis.
Thank you for the call, Reverend. He is very well-read. Walt in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Walter, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey, Walt.
George, for the good of mankind, I think we have to come to the realization that the Bible, like so many other holy books, are the product of man's imagination. George, you know, as I said previously, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, the Greeks, and of course the Romans, they all had their epic tales and myths, and we have to come to the realization that the ancient Hebrews, the Jews, were no different. George, I like to think of Jerusalem as the Hollywood of antiquity, where great stories, you know, the Bible's a great storybook. I'm not saying that there's no value in the Bible, that there's nothing to be learned from the Bible. There's also value in the Quran and the Hindu Mahabharata and whatnot. But, George, mankind, for the good of mankind, we have to come to the realization that all of these things come from man's imagination.
Well, but could that imagination come from truth? Things that really happen?
If you want to say the imagination came from a god or whatever you want to call it, that's one thing, George, but that's contrary to, you know, to what science tells us. I talked about evolution. I think it's been proven beyond a doubt. The fossil evidence is overwhelming. And, George, as I've said, you know, I don't want to seem like a know-it-all or a nitpicker, but...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, George, I've used that tongue-twisting phrase, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. George, and what that means is that we literally evolve again in our own mother's wombs, just as our species has evolved in nature.
All right. Are you saying, though, that the Bible is a storybook?
Essentially, yes, George. It's,
all right. Let's get Jeffrey's take on that. Jeffrey, what do you think? I mean, that's his view.
Well, George, I got to tell you, I say almost every day that my subscriber base, the people in my chat room at the Christian Whistleblower YouTube, are the smartest people around. And after listening to our last four callers, I think that we might have some big competition, George. What a bunch of smart people that you've got listening to this show. And, you know, I understand where Walt's coming from, and I think he's coming from a heart that is true, and he's not trying to be, you know, exclusive to anybody. And the one problem I have with people, whether they believe the Bible, the Quran, you know, whatever their belief is, when they get to the place where if you don't believe my God the way my God says, the way my church says, then you are going to hell. If we become us four and no more, we're the only one that's right, I think that is a tragic error. Does the Bible have some things to learn in it? Yes. Does the Quran have some things to learn in it? Yes. Does some of the great writings of the East have things to learn in them? Yes. Are they all the Word of God? At this point, I would say they probably all contain words of God, but if I would point at one book and say this is the only Word of God, I don't know if I could do that anymore.
Interesting. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Jeffrey Doherty all about what is happening out there. On our next Coast to Coast program, Seth Shustak joins us from SETI as we talk about extraterrestrial life, and then Bill Douglas joins us to talk about the gospel of science. So don't miss that part of Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, Jeffrey Doherty with us. Again, his website is his name, jeffreydoherty.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and his YouTube channel is The Christian Whistleblower. I love that. It's a great name. How'd you come up with that name? It was one of our callers, wasn't it? Jeff, are you there? Oh, no, he's faded off. Gina, why don't you call him back? Because he apparently is gone. And call him right back and get him on, and we'll get going on that. Jeffrey Doherty with us, of course, disappeared by some government force or something that got him off the air. But let's go back to our callers and continue our chat. Let's international line. Johann's with us from Switzerland. You're calling from a long way, my man. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I got a little bit of a cold. But I'll try to clear this up as quick as I can. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote Sherlock Holmes. In the book Sherlock Holmes, he talks about deductive reasoning. And whenever you've eliminated all that is impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth. So I conduct my archaeology and my astrophysics based on that. And if you combine astrophysics and archaeology, you could see the essence of how religion is developed. If you have aliens who are fighting in spaceships, and one of their spaceships is hit, and it maroons itself on the Earth in the sands of Saudi Arabia, that's Lucifer's spaceship. It's a flying saucer. Michael the Archangel's spaceship, he shot him down. So Lucifer has a time machine still working on his spaceship. That's how we get in trouble with Lucifer through time, because if you land on the Earth and you're an alien with a spaceship and you look like the humans who you have spawned, then it's hard to detect who is a god and who is just an alien with a time machine.
And the good between the bad. And Jeffrey, you're joining us somewhat into this call. What do you think of that possibility that ETs could be perceived as gods, the devil, and things like that?
Well, it's certainly a possibility, and I think our friend, you know, Eric Von Daniken wrote a great book about that, Chariots of the Gods. And I think the premise that any, you know, technology that is sufficiently advanced is, you know, likely to be taken as magic, or and any being that wields it likely to be taken as divine. I don't think that so much now in this day and age with the, you know, complete ubiquitous nature of information and shows like this one that we'd be that quite easily duped today. So I don't know that you could show up on a spaceship and say, hi, I'm God. But I don't know, George, that somebody might not try it.
Well, that's a good point. Johann, thank you. That was a long call from Switzerland. Let's go next to Parlin, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Doug's with us. Welcome to the program. Hey, Doug, go ahead.
Thank you. How are you?
Oh, hi, Doug.
How's everything?
Everything's good. Thank you.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. Yeah, earlier when your guest was speaking about UFOs, I'm not sure how the topic came about, but he was saying that he thought maybe it was a good idea not to mess with them, that they probably are dangerous. I have the feeling, and I have another comment after this.
Sure.
I have the feeling that if they wanted to do harm to us, they could have done it to us pretty long time ago. And the second part of that was I believe they're here not only to guide us toward new technology, but help us how to understand it and learn it and use it to our benefit without wiping the world asunder. It's like the saying goes, a war doesn't determine who's right or wrong. It only determines who's left.
Interesting take, Jeffrey. If they were going to destroy us, it probably would have been pretty easy.
Yeah, I think that's a very thoughtful comment there by Doug. And that kind of goes to this new idea that's emerging that malevolent species are confined to their home planet. And I find myself moving more and more as I listen and as I learn and as I, you know, listen to myself and, you know, my intuition that the any beings coming from beyond the stars, any beings that are really extraterrestrial, I don't think we have any proof, George, that they are malevolent, and my expectation would be that they would be along the lines of what Doug is talking about. And if we are seeing malevolent beings that we think are ETs, if we rethink that and consider the possibility that they might be intraterrestrials, let's face it, George, if there's beings living in the ocean, we've been doing enough stuff to the ocean that might upset them. If there's beings living underground, we've been doing enough stuff underground that might upset them. Yep. They might be up here knocking on our door saying, hey, turn down the stereo.
Exactly. Always that possibility. We've got Rob in Manning County, Idaho. Welcome to the program. Hey, Robbie, go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Observation and a question. You know, to answer your first two questions, these are quotes of the Lord. Man is that he might have joy. And another quote, this is my work and my glory to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man. In the question for your guest, the 17th chapter of John, Christ talks about being with the Father before this world was. I mean, talk about, is that not extraterrestrial? by definition, but in the Christ's last word on the cross, unto thee I commend my spirit, speaking to the Father, obviously in a different dimension, realm. But I have a, what do you think of Hiram and Joseph Smith being murdered in the New Jerusalem, these two witnesses, and the beginning of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? Do you have any observations on that?
I think those are fascinating questions, Rob. And by the way, the first church I ever pastored was in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, so probably somewhere in at least near proximity to where you are. You know, I right now as I'm sitting here, I'm sitting probably 60 miles from the Church of Jesus Christ temple lot. I'm sitting here 60 miles from the lot that I think most people that are of that faith believe is where the temple will be built someday. And I think the Utah Church has offered them upwards of $1 billion for that lot and has been turned down. I think that the story of, you know, Hiram and Joseph Smith is certainly an interesting story. I actually wrote a book about that way back in the day called Joseph Smith Was Not a Liar. I think he was contacted by a supernatural entity. I think if you study their trek eastward out to Utah, you have to recognize that there was a lot of supernatural occurrences that took place. But if we begin to say, which God was it? Was it the God of the Bible? Then you get into a lot of interesting discussions. But I think there's a lot of room around the table for people of different faiths. I think we'd have to say that the God that's depicted in the Old and New Testament and the God of Joseph and Hiram, probably not the same God, but who am I? I'm just a guy on the radio with an opinion.
And, of course, Joseph Smith, the person who founded Mormonism.
Absolutely.
In the 1800s, right?
I believe it was 1834 when he dug up those plates, George, in Palmyra, New York.
Let's go to Dallas, Texas. Bill's with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Bill.
Hi, George. How are you?
Okay.
One, I have a couple of questions. One for you. Would you open up the caller line sometime to aliens and hybrids and see who calls?
All right. We'll put that down as a possible. Yeah, good idea.
Okay, I was going to ask your guest to have him comment on what he thinks about alien implants.
Alien implants. We had a guest who's no longer with us. He's passed on, Dr. Roger Lear, Jeffrey.
Yes.
Who used to remove these things from people, whatever they may be. But go ahead, your thoughts.
I think that we've had so many people like Mr. Lear. I also think of, you know, some of the people I've had on my program that are honest, trustworthy, sane people that have come up with these verifiable implants in their bodies. There's too many of that to dismiss them as kooks and nuts and, you know, fringe crazy people. They are seeing things. They are showing up in their bodies. Again, my question or my thoughts, Bill, go to why do we always necessarily assign it to an extraterrestrial, somebody from another galaxy, another planet? Maybe we can also open our minds again to a concept of interterrestrials. But these people, there's too many good people coming up with these stories for them to be dismissed, George, in my opinion.
Okay, let's go next to Drew in Northern California. First-time caller for Drew. Hi, Drew. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, George. Long-time listener.
Thank you.
I have an AA in sociology, and I have a bachelor's degree in Western civilization. I'd just like to say that energy can be created, but it cannot be destroyed. And there's only one true God, and that people like Jeff like to pick and choose what parts of the Bible that he finds that he can give a synopsis on or his opinion and then pick it apart, when you really need to give the full story or the full version. I really have studied some of his work, Jeff's work, and I believe him to be wholehearted, but I'd like to see more in-depth of the full picture and how he's talking about, you know, John Smith was not a liar, the seer stones, and how he got contacted by God. I just think that, you know, there needs to be more context, more elaboration, not just simple picking apart of what you pick and choose. And not saying that he does it deliberately, but I'd like to see maybe a full 1,000-page thick book of the whole breakdown, not just one specific incident. That's all I really have to say.
All right. Jeffrey, go ahead. You have your rebut.
That's certainly an interesting thought. And if Drew, you know, would read my books or if he would watch any of my videos on YouTube, what I do, George, is I actually, if I'm talking about a scriptural verse, I will show that verse on the screen, and we'll actually go word by word in the original Greek into English translation. So I don't know how I could go any more painstakingly than word for word. I guess maybe we could break it down to letter by letter. Now, of course, I haven't made an exhaustive study of everything that's out there, but the things I do tackle, the things I do study, and I mean, 100,000 hours, I've gone through a lot, and I don't think I can be any more meticulous than word for word from the original language into English and going through what the meanings of the words are, what the etymology of the words are, where they came from. I'm doing the best I can. Am I doing it perfectly? Probably not. And I appreciate Drew's encouragement, and I will redouble my efforts to try to be even more meticulous in my research.
Joe in the Bronx. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. How are you?
Hanging in there. Good.
Okay. All right. Well, things are going to get better.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Okay, good. Jeffrey, what light can you shed on the books of the Bible that were either dropped or abandoned?
Well, that's a great question, Joe, and thank you for calling in tonight. The books that are in the Bible that were dropped from the Bible, most of them were dropped because they contain information that the dominant paradigm power structure didn't want in the Bible. Of course, you don't have to be a brilliant Bible scholar to figure that out. I have found, and I make this statement, and it will get me in trouble with a lot of people.
You in trouble? Nah.
It would probably be more helpful, or at least as helpful, if you read the Bible to also read the Nag Hammadi scriptures as well, because there's a lot that was left out that I think should have been in. And, boy, that would give you a real full understanding, I think, of the literature of that first century.
It's an eye-opener, isn't it?
Oh, it's a great eye-opener. And if I would, I'd throw in Joe Atwell, Caesar's Messiah, as well.
Since you've been talking about this for years now, have you noticed a change in perception from people?
I think I have, George, and you know, if you look at the statistics that are put out by Pew and other researchers, people are leaving Orthodox religion in droves. For the first time ever, over half of people under the age of 30 identified as none of the above in their religion. And most people say, oh, that's horrible, that's terrible. I am celebrating that, George, because I think people are waking up and realizing they're not leaving God, George, but they're leaving religion. They're saying, we're tired of hand-me-down religion. We're tired of what people have told us. We're tired of what people have sold us. I believe I'm divine, I'm sovereign, I'm free. I believe I've got the spark of divinity within, and I believe that I can study and figure this out on my own.
I think so, too. A minute left to go. Jeffrey, I'd like you to give out your website and your YouTube channel again for folks.
Absolutely, George. It's the Christian Whistleblower on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, put in Christian Whistleblower. And I am so profoundly thankful to be on this show as many times as I have been. It is the greatest honor of my life to be on the show, and I feel that way every single time, George.
Well, I want to also thank you for the handling of our incredible callers. Whether they agree with you or not, you give them the kind of respect that they deserve, and I appreciate that.
Well, George, it's my privilege, and they are guests in your home like I am. It's the very, very least I can do, and my hat's off and salute to you and all the great staff there at Coast to Coast AM.
Keep in touch with us, Jeffrey. I was able to write a foreword to one of his books and really had a great time. He's got it on Kindle. He's got a lot of books on Kindle as well, but just a decent guy with incredible views about ETs and what they may or may not be. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Badal, George Knapp, Ian Punnett. I'm George Norrie somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.